Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Hello, my friends, my foes. Welcome back to the worst year ever.
Particularly, hello to Katie's foes.
Yeah, what's up,
which
Katie's
is, which
foes?
Which is
I don't know.
The number don't know. One listening Me? Demographic for this podcast.
I've done so many intros this year, this goddamn year, and I just mixed it up. I opened my mouth and words came out. And you know what? I do welcome my foes. I know they're here.
As you should.
I know some of you hate me. That's fine. Now it got too real.
Oh, no.
I'm Katie Stoll, and I'm joined, as always, by my friends.
Hi.
And your foes.
And my last name is Johnston, I guess, if we're doing that kind of thing.
That was so funny. What's poppin', Katie's foes?
Yeah. I currently don't identify as Katie's foe, but you know that scene in The Lord of the Rings when Galadriel like goes all nutso on Bilbo and like talks about how she took I'm waiting for Katie to do that. And at that point I will become Katie's foe to save the world from tyranny.
And who knows, maybe that day is today. We'll find out.
It might
as
be.
Dive in.
It could happen at any second. We've all known that from
here.
The beginning of this
it
podcast.
Could happen here.
It could happen here. It could happen here in this podcast.
You know, I tuned on MSNBC briefly at some point in the past
month.
That
was a mistake.
And it had, I know, but it had like a real big Chiron caption of, it could happen here.
Yeah.
You sons of bitches. You sons of bitches.
I took a picture of it. It's floating around somewhere.
So angry at all the people who are worse than me talking about how a civil war might happen now, as if I'm just you sons of bitches.
It's okay.
And I just wanted to give a what's up to all of Robert's foes.
Yeah,
MSNBC,
all of
Robert's foes.
My foes are any people who have just started writing think pieces about a civil war in the United States in the last 2 months. And are,
it's too
are
late,
acting,
guys.
Yeah.
Those are not thoughtful
like
pieces.
Like David Froome, you son of a bitch. Sorry.
Oh,
not,
Froome.
Not,
sorry.
On the
fuck Froome. Yeah, we're going to talk about Froome later in this episode. You know what? I had a great
David
moment
Froome.
I do want to talk about because I'm a narcissist. I was heading to a protest on Friday night with a group of about 300 to 400 Portlanders, all armed with very large wooden shields, who like marched off in military lines and did battle with
the police.
I thought
I recognized David Froome in that line of people with shields.
Yeah, yeah, he had a falchion in both hands and was
amazing.
Was not there. But as this like line of shield bearing marchers was like heading out like a Roman maniple into battle. And I'm like kind of walking alongside them. These like four or five kids all in black. They looked like they were like maybe in their late teens, early 20s, and like completely blocked up head to toe. Like walk up to me, and this young woman, or maybe girl, I don't even know if she was of adult age, says to me, "I just wanted you to know that my affinity group and I all listened to It Could Happen Here last year, and it's we've completely based everything that we're doing now around it as a result."
Whoa.
And I was like, "I have no idea what you're going to do. Probably commit serious crimes tonight. I'm very proud of you, and I hope that you don't get hurt. But also, yeah, I don't know." Weird.
What's an affinity group?
An affinity group is like your buddies, basically. It's a group of people with whom you share
affinity. I thought you said
affinity.
Infinity.
No, like the protests in Portland, and as a general rule, like any kind of sustained illegalist like civil action is kind of made up of a bunch of different interlocking groups of people who are all buds and want to do the same kinds of shit.
Buds.
Yeah, that would be how I'd describe it.
Well, I've already learned something today.
Anyway, thank you to the teenagers out there getting horribly abused by police.
Yeah. Well, and the police, who are in their own affinity groups, right?
They are. They are in a very large affinity group.
Cracking open a cold
union.
One with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
The cold one is the skull, right?
Katie, yes. Cody, yes. Have you guys seen those really creepy Blue Lives Matter protesters that keep going to Beverly Hills on Saturdays?
Oh, that seems unsettling.
I've heard of them. That is different than the... Is that the same as the big MAGA protest that happens in Beverly Hills every weekend?
I think so.
There must be some cross-section there.
I think it kind of feels like they're shipping them in right now. That's kind of what it feels like. Like, they're not, like, they're bussing people in to make it look bigger than it actually is. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We had a big rally of a significant number of people in Portland this weekend from a weird Christian cult in Redding that I...
Redding, California?
Redding, California. Yeah, they came up and did like a big anti-mask gathering, which was illegal because you can't have outdoor gatherings of more than 50 people unless there's like masks and social distancing, and nobody was wearing masks at this thing. It was
bunch of cops cracking down on them?
No, of course not.
Oh, weird.
Of course not. Of
Maybe
course
they've
not,
learned
Kate.
Their lesson.
Yeah, yes. In other news, like the same day, they arrested one of Jeremy Christian's early victims, this young woman, Demetria Hester, who's been leading peaceful protests in town and who was... So, like, before Christian stabbed two people to death on that MAX train, he assaulted her, and she reported him to the police, and they did not a goddamn thing. And then they did not a goddamn thing because, you know, Jeremy Christian was just exercising his First Amendment rights, and then they arrested Demetria Hester for exercising her First Amendment rights.
Well, you know.
Thank God we have police.
Second is the first, right? That's the order. That's how we prosecute. That's how we arrest.
So
I love prosecutions.
Today, it's a bit of a hodgepodge episode again, because my God, there's so much happening all the time everywhere.
Nah.
We wanted to start, I think, by talking about these coronavirus relief executive orders that Trump announced last week. And Cody Johnston prepared the words to start that conversation.
And just for like equality's sake, what's up, Cody's foes?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, thank you very much. I mean, we're equal opportunity here. I don't want any of my foes to think that I was ignoring you. I was not.
They're more. I think it's more Cody's John's foes. No, that's not
Fody,
better.
Cody's Fodies. Right?
Cody's Fodies works.
Cody's Fodies. I mean, Cotography's photog.
You took it too far.
I've been calling it
photosynthesis and photo and so on.
As riveting as this is for
are you
everybody.
Guys this excited?
Let's just take a moment to appreciate what good radio this is.
So good.
Just amazing.
Why
downloadable radio.
Show?
We love it. Are you guys excited about the election and how we're finally gonna flank the Dems
fucked?
From the left? No, we're gonna Trump is gonna become a leftist hero and do a lot of he's gonna help the people because he's a fighter for the common man. And the Dems are all corporatist and ineffectual and he's the one that's gonna do it.
I'm pumped for this.
Are you pumped? Actually, my assessment of the Democrats wasn't too far off, but I have seen a lot of people talk about how Trump is gonna flank those Dems from the left. He's more left than Pelosi. It's nonsense.
Having this story come out and it keeps not being true.
It's still not true. Because he will say things vaguely like, oh, I'm gonna take care of I'm gonna halt evictions, I'm gonna do this and this and this. Because the Democrats aren't necessarily doing enough or offering enough to people during this pandemic. But that doesn't mean that Donald fucking Trump is going to. It might mean that he will say that he will, And I've talked about this for like a year and a half.
It almost certainly will mean that he'll say one thing that's not true.
Right. And I've talked about like for a long time how like he will probably slowly get on board with the language of somebody who wants like Medicare for all or like universal health care and that kind of thing. But it's going to be exclusionary and it's going to be bad. And it's going to hurt people ultimately because that's what he does. That's the whole thing. That's his whole that's the whole deal we're
in.
So
basically,
right now.
Both you and Robert are prophets. I get it.
Sorry.
You're smart.
To all the foes out there. Katie, are you a foe of the pod now?
I don't know. Maybe
foe
I'm
of
a
the
foe.
Pod. Katie, you know. When we talk about the crimes of capitalism, one of them should be listed the fact that I did just get paid to make that joke.
Mm-hmm. Can I have it? Your money? Okay.
No, of course not.
That's fair. Yeah. So Trump, amidst all of these announcements, like, yeah, I'll save the world. I'll do this. I'll do whatever. He signed 4 executive orders and memorandum that... were designed to give the illusion and the aesthetic that he is helping people, and he's just pretty much not really. One of them was about unemployment benefits. He is offering $400, which is $200 less than what the Democrats have tried to get for people and have had. So it's I'm not like a numbers guy.
He must know that that's better than. If he said it.
Well, I was going to say it's less. 400 seems less than 600, right?
I mean, it seems less than 600 to me, but...
But again, not a numbers guy, just sort of a general guess. And so not only is this less than what people need right now and not actually really helpful. I mean, it's more helpful than nothing, so there you go. but one of the ways he's getting this money is $44 billion from the Disaster Relief Fund. Which I don't know if anyone has been paying attention to.
Repeat
disasters.
That number again.
$44 billion.
Well, that's not much money.
It's not much money.
That's just $44 billion yachts, Cody.
Exactly.
That's not even $50 billion yachts. So.
You know, yeah, I was ready to dismiss whatever you had to say, but that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called perspective, and I've lost mine. So I thank you for that. He's basically taking money from yachts. Because if an amount is the same as an amount you'd pay for something else, you're actually taking it from the other thing. Anyway, $44 billion from the Disaster Relief Fund halfway through the year, when I don't know if anyone's familiar with like hurricanes that we have quite a bit.
I had a couple of hurricanes when I was in New Orleans earlier this year.
In hurricane season.
Yeah, I mean, it's never not hurricane season.
yeah.
It's hurricane season somewhere.
Yeah, what would be the problem with hurricanes, Cody? Is there some downside to them?
Oh, I feel like maybe some homes and things get destroyed and people potentially get...
All right, well, I vomited a lot in that lady's house, but I wouldn't say it was destroyed. I mean, she can replace the carpet.
Okay.
Okay, well, she can't, because she's not going to get that $1 billion from the $44 billion cut from Disaster Relief Fund. To fix the carpet that you threw up on.
Never heard anybody describe their vomit as a hurricane, but...
It was. I mean, the vomit was made of hurricanes.
That's what that song is about, right?
Is that like some mixed drink in Portland?
No. That's New Orleans. That's like the... That's
New
like
Orleans.
The
story
that's right.
of Robert throwing up. You all know the song.
Yeah, if you go to... Back when New Orleans hadn't been wiped out by a plague... there would be like tons of terrible bars with the same awful hurricane slushies that you could buy for too much money. And then step in the vomit of a frat boy who was puking off of a balcony. And it was America's greatest city for a time before
Heck
the plague.
Yeah. Heck. Yes.
Oh, the before times.
God, I could go for some fried
down,
alligator.
Robert.
I know.
Please continue.
Sorry.
Oh,
so
you want me to continue?
He's giving the hand wave signal.
So it's just, it just seems like maybe a bad place to get this money, for a thing. Also as, we'll talk about a little bit, it's technically not, he's not allowed to do that because Congress controls like the purse strings of, right, of here we the go. Nation. And so there's various talk of whether or not it's even legal to do this. Although, again, like if you talk to, let's say, the Senate Minority Leader or the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, they'll say it's illegal, but like who knows? Pelosi referred to these orders as absurdly unconstitutional and then followed it up by saying, well, the fact is that whether they're legal or not takes time to figure out. So very
so which is it, Nancy? There.
And Chuck She's Schumer said
dancing Nancy.
Dancing Nancy around it. And then Chuck Schumer said, I will leave that up to the attorneys to decide whether it's unconstitutional or illegal.
Nancy Pelosi Doe. Sorry.
Nancy Pelosi. Yep. And Chuck Schumer was never a practicing lawyer, but he did pass the bar and then get into politics. 48 senators, current senators, used to be lawyers. So when Chuck That's Schumer says, I will leave that up to the attorney. That's a different problem. But
yeah. Like, aren't but you like, an attorney, Chuck?
This idea of like, well, you know, that's a legal question. Leave it up to them. It's like, well, that's your, isn't that part of your job, guys?
Yeah, fair point. Frustrating point.
Frustrating. Also, so a lot of this, so this executive order also, it puts a bit of a pause on the payroll tax. He refers to it as a payroll tax holiday. One bit of relief is to defer payroll tax for a few months until December.
Thus solving the problem forever.
Thus solving the problem forever. You would still have to pay this. It would just defer it. It's a deferral down the line.
So you have
tax
to pay a lot more at once?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that March hasn't ended yet, we're probably never going to get to December again. So
Seems like a good deal
to me.
Really, really long month. We should just call this podcast the worst month ever, and it's 12 months long.
The bad March show.
The real bad March. It was a real bad March for a year.
March badness.
All right. Well, we're done for the day.
And
that's clearly a win.
Show.
Sophie continues to shake our head.
I understand. The payroll tax also funds Social Security and Medicare, and this is the real thing we got to get down to, because as I mentioned earlier, anytime Trump like has the aesthetic of like, oh, he's flanking the Dems, he is not. He doesn't want to. He's not trying to. That's not what he's doing. He is gutting like all of the safety nets and like the things that we need in the country to like help people in order to present this thing. And so he's also
destroying the one part of the government that like every person who's not a howling monster likes. Like, the post office is good.
<It's> everybody loves
everybody
the
loves
office.
The post office.
It's got like the highest approval rating.
It has literally the highest of all of them. It is nonsense.
They do an absolutely crucial job very well.
Everyone who has Medicare is like, I love having Medicare. I'm so grateful that I have Medicare now. And so he's trying to gut all of these things.
God, I'm so
and
angry.
Present it as though he's helping us, and he's not. And I just really
Didn't
hope
he
that.
Also, say something about pre-existing conditions aren't going to affect your healthcare enrollment when that is the whole thing with Obamacare.
Yeah, it's nonsense. He has said that he will do something about pre-existing conditions. He's currently suing to not include that part in Obamacare. It's in Obamacare. He's trying to get rid of it, and he's saying that he's gonna not do it. He's a wild fella. We love him, don't we, folks?
We do.
So he's all over the place and doing this kind of stuff. And when he's asked if he's gonna get sued, his response was, "Well, you always get sued. Everything you do, you get sued." And my response to that is, "No, everything you do, you get sued." Yeah.
If that is a thing that happens in your life, you should reevaluate
Maybe it's not
your life.
You. Maybe it's not everybody else. Maybe it's not an everybody else problem, buddy.
It reminds me of, I was in jury duty at the beginning of this year. Do you guys remember that? I cannot believe
God.
I was in
yes.
jury duty at the
beginning
of this
year. Oh, God,
year.
Yeah, back when juries and existed. What
Jesus.
A day.
And I mean, it's remarkable that I ended up on a case that happened to be about a building I used to live in. But that aside,
that is very funny.
It's wild. the guy, the landlord, had had like 90 lawsuits or something wild. It's like the same thing. A scummy rich real estate mogul gets sued for everything and doesn't sweat it. You get sued for everything. Sorry.
Yeah.
Beside the point, just relating it to my life.
I mean, it's true. That sounds like everyone but him problem.
Yep.
God.
I think it's time for us to take an ad break real quick.
I'm tired.
Is that true, Sophie? Can you confirm or deny?
I don't know what day it is or where I am.
We're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to come back for more of this.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we are back as promised from that ad break.
We did it.
Oh my God. What a
killing. Great back from it. I'm killing my intros and transitions
left
today, guys.
To it.
I'm proud of you, Katie.
Thanks, Soph. Cody, please, please, please continue talking to us about this monster president, please.
I can't wait. I love him. He's really good. Yeah, so we just talked about his, he's proudly announcing, quote, I'll be pursuing a major executive order requiring health insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions for all of its customers. So thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, so that's just one of his executive orders about the payroll tax. He's also, another thing about this, aside from the fact that the payroll tax helps pay for Social Security and Medicare programs that people need, and also, like, he has said that in seeking re-election, he will move to get rid of the payroll tax. Like, this is part of his plan. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do this for this executive order. Like, that is a goal of his, which seems like the opposite of him saying that he would never cut Social Security or Medicare, which he's clearly actively trying to do. So I guess my point with this one is just anytime you see someone say that, you know, Trump is flanking the Dems from the left, tell them he's not. And like, you can criticize Democrats for not doing enough and not fighting hard enough and for being like, let's let the lawyers, like all the stuff that they do. You can do that without pretending that Trump's fascism, which is what it is good. Well, he's going to have the aesthetics of leftism as much as he can without actually doing anything because he's a fascist. That's his fucking game.
No, Cody, he's going to give people $600 a month again. He's flanking the Dems from the left.
I think the problem is definitely in how we talk about it. Like, it's easy. I mean, you can say anything with authority and it starts to take hold. And if people say he's flanking the Dems from the left, you say, no, that's quite literally not what he's doing at all. That's what he wants it to look like. He wants to appeal to things that, you know, to people that might not expect it from him, or to show his base, like, look, we're doing this innovative thing, the things that they would, you know, outhand dismiss coming from a liberal.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's just like, yeah, it's like for years, it's saying that, like, for years, we've known, everybody knows this. Oh, yeah, he's a fraud and like a right-wing faux populist demagogue. That's what he does. So anytime you say that he's doing this from the left, you are getting duped. You are being duped right now. Or you're like doing it on purpose. You're like lying on purpose. I don't know. But yeah, there's a better way to talk about it and a better way to point out he is clearly a liar. Mm-hmm. Even like a week ago, he was, there's an announcement like, I'm going to, canceling evictions, getting rid of all evictions, something Congress has tried to do and did do briefly. The deadline is over for that. But everyone's like, oh, look, he's doing it again. He's getting the Dems doing what they do. No, he didn't do that. He didn't cancel evictions. I'm going to quote from this. The actual thing says, the Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Director of CDC shall consider whether any measures temporarily halting residential evictions of any tenants for failure to pay rent are reasonably necessary to prevent the further spread of COVID-19 from one state or possession into any other state or possession. So he said he's looking into it. He's like, the actual order, the memo is saying that he will consider, he will have people consider whether or not it's worth looking into. It's nonsense. he's a nonsense person. And like, I don't know, we don't need to spend too much time on these, because I do think it's just important to recognize that, like, it is an aesthetic thing. It's this illusion that he's helping people and, like, flanking the Dems, when, like, he could easily push the Republican Party to agree to the bill that the Democrats have written. Ed Markey, foe of the Kennedys, earlier today tweeted about a, like, he has this written. Give every person in our country $2,000 a month for the duration of the pandemic, $2,000 a month for 3 months after that, and $2,000 a month retroactive to March. To which Ted Cruz replied, why be so cheap? Give everyone $1 million a day, every day forever, and 3 soy lattes a day, and a foot massage. We have a magic money tree, and we should use it. One thing Trump could do if he was really wanted to flank the Dems is tell Ted Cruz to shut the fuck up about also, soy lattes and give people money latte. So they can survive this pandemic. Yeah, unbelievable.
Doesn't he know that
you like a soy latte over an oatmeal
yeah,
latte?
Yeah, I was going to say, come on.
So
I don't know. I want to just drive down. You know what I really want, Katie, is to take a nice chill drive in like a in a convertible down the Pacific Coastal Highway, listening to the fat beats of Ben Shapiro saying wet ass P word and over again. Yeah, that's what
I mean. Hey. This is an iHeartRadio show. We try to keep it's W word, A word, P word. Okay.
Thank you.
That dream can be a reality, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can
back
one
to
day.
Your poignant points.
Well, okay. I mean, it's just more nonsense. And like, he sucks. Get him out. Get rid of him. And then tell the Democrats to go fuck themselves. But so real quick to Ed Markey's credit, again, foe of the Kennedys. As we all know, people who want Medicare for All and the Green New Deal are real staunch enemies of the Kennedys. One assassinated him, and here we have Ed Markey, who responded to Ted by saying, it's not a goddamn joke, Ted. Millions of families are facing hunger, the threat of eviction, and the loss of their health care during a pandemic that is worsening every day. Get real. Because Ed Markey rules, and Ted Cruz is a fucking clown piece of garbage. He's such Trolls. A weird online freak. It's so bizarre. Soy lattes, is it 2015, Ted? Are you like on the Daily Wire's Reddit? Like, what are you doing? It's I'm malfunctioning. I am sorry.
Perhaps. I'll just remind you that you are talking about the executive orders. That
I guess
really
so.
Really snotty sounding.
I mean,
how
my
I meant
gosh.
It. I was just trying to help.
It's okay.
Just
I'm just like
shout
really
out
offended.
To one of Cody's foes.
I know. I was about to say, really, I'm becoming a foedy for shody.
Oh, God. Yeah. Cody's foedy. Katie's foedy.
It's not
foedy.
Great, Sophie. I'm right there with you. But
it's
I started
our,
it, so I have to commit.
Best, I'm just saying.
I don't know. I think they're going to love it.
Yeah, he's also deferring student loan payments.
Cool.
But not really.
Yeah.
So like,
have you run out of steam?
End of story.
End of story.
I just he sucks so bad, and like
he does suck so bad.
I just, and like you, everyone's such a liar. It's so frustrating.
And. It is all so frustrating, especially since this whole time he's done such a fucking bad abysmal job of handling everything, but specifically we're talking about a coronavirus relief package and about the coronavirus. You know, the U.S. now has over 5 million cases and 163,000 people dead. That's the official number as of today, but that is not the actual number. I just always have to say that caveat whenever I give number updates. I wanted to just give some school reopening updates because that is a very big thing right now on everybody's mind with COVID. And
well, everybody but Betsy DeVos.
Everybody but Betsy DeVos. Yes, absolutely. I have her in
that
this little blurb.
Nightmare of a woman.
It's already started, guys. The reopenings have started. After a single week of school, more than 250 students and teachers from one Georgia school district
learned a lot and are grateful for their education.
Yeah. No, yes. Wrong. Maybe they learned something, but they've been asked to quarantine for 2 weeks after several teachers and students tested positive for COVID-19. Again, one school district after 1 week back. This is from USA Today. In a letter to families on Friday, Superintendent Brian Hightower said that the trend of students and staff testing positive every day will continue as we operate schools during a pandemic. We know under a microscope as national media follows the reopening of schools across the country, he wrote, but know that our decisions are not based on what people in New York or Kansas think, nor are we concerned about optics or image. We're focused on doing what's best for our community.
Why do you shade Kansas and New York like that?
I know. Well, apparently specific. What's best for the community is letting your kids get sick and maybe die and bringing the virus home to your families who also might get sick and die. Cool. But Trump and his administration are continuing to push the narrative that kids are suffering from being isolated at home instead of, you know, people suffering because of coronavirus. And, you know, that makes perfect sense to me because, you know, Trump has always been really compassionate about the psychological effects of kids being locked up, you know?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Very concerned.
He cares about
It's a people. Joke.
Because it's what they say about Trump and his presidency. The compassion is the point.
Yeah.
The compassion is the point. He also recently claimed on Fox News that kids are virtually immune to COVID-19.
Did he get that from Elon Musk?
Yeah. I'm going to give you guys this disturbing fact. According to a report from the American Academy of Pediatrics, over 97,000 children tested positive for coronavirus in the United States just between July 16th and July 30th. Oh, 97,000. And while, yes, it is less likely for kids to die from the virus, it's not impossible. And a new study from the CDC suggests that one-third of children who are hospitalized with COVID-19 end up in intensive care. And look, at the beginning of this, we'd all hoped or thought that for some reason the virus wouldn't affect kids. There was a lot of misinformation. There still is. We're still learning stuff. And yeah, it's riskiest for people over the age of 60. But it doesn't, can and does affect children. And they are apparently likely to be high spreaders because the symptoms may not show up in them. But you would still bring the virus home to potentially vulnerable members of your family and the community. And you mentioned
kids don't live with adults, though.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the problem? You put them all together in a big room, and then they stay there. They don't go anywhere afterwards.
I mean, I will just say that if people had taken the advice I've been giving for years, which is that we wall off all of the states in the middle of the country outside of the
kids
coasts,
there.
Force the adults out and make them a giant open air child prison for all of the minors in the country. If we'd done that, this whole coronavirus thing would no longer be a problem.
Yeah, I think
elements of it.
The
anyway.
United States government needs to watch a little movie called House Arrest. Thank you.
Betsy DeVos, like you mentioned earlier, Sophie, waved all of this away by basically saying that there's risk involved with everything. Quote, risk.
That's true.
Risk is embedded in everything we do. Learning to ride a bike to the risk of getting in a space capsule and getting shot off in a rocket into space. What?
What the fuck does that have to do with teachers and schools and principals and children and families and coronavirus?
Well, Sophie, because if a kid falls off a bike, it's just as likely to kill grandma, you know?
Jesus.
See?
Yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry, Katie. You're 100% right.
I've made a compelling point.
She is such a moron.
Yeah. But, you know, it sucks. Officials have been pushing the administration to, you know, get serious and start warning parents and school districts about, you know, the risk of reopening schools right now. But I guess they don't want to do that. The administration has said that they should instead focus on bolstering the president's response plan, which he doesn't have one of. Anyway, this is all fun and good. And before we go to another ad break, just want to follow up with United States Postal Service stuff. We talked about it a little bit last week. But shockingly, the situation has gotten worse in between. Now, not only is the post office considering closing locations throughout the country, but on Friday, Louis DeJoy, new postmaster general, Republican mega donor, and businessman with investments in USPS competitors, announced some big shakeups. This is from Fast Times. Changes were announced Friday by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy and radically alter the leadership structure of the USPS. The reorganization will see 23 major executives at the Postal Service resign or displaced, including, as Business Insider points out, two execs who oversee critical day-to-day operations. He's claiming now, that the... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. Look, please continue.
I was just going to say that, you know, he claims that this is going to allow the Postal Service to reduce costs and capture new revenue. But critics are pointing out that the Postal Service is a for-profit business, you know, and the leadership changes are very alarming for everybody right now. And it's going to have – it could have severe consequences, not just – in terms of vote by mail, but for people, for workers, for seniors, and for voters, all of it. You know, people get their medication through the Postal Service.
Okay, so Katie, I'm a physically healthy white man with no outstanding medical issues, whose main use of post of any kind is having FedEx send me various quasi-legal narcotics.
Sure.
I don't understand why we need a Postal Service, and I'm not willing to listen to any of your answers. And I'm just going
to
leave the podcast now.
You know, it's much cheaper to do your mail through the Postal Service. Robert, come back. Okay, well, he's strictly in the faux camp now.
Yeah, it's the attack on the post office should be a story every day because it's an attack on our democracy.
Yep.
And it's an incredibly valuable service. Even articles who think they're helping will run things like, well, the post office didn't make a profit this year or whatever. It's like, well, it's not supposed to. So shut the fuck up. Please stop. Please.
We do have to go for an ad break. But before we do, I just want to say, outside of mailing in your mail-in ballots immediately when you get them, maybe write letters and buy stamps and send people nice notes. That's something that we can do that might not save the post office, but is a kind thing to do and at least shows support. Also, they have a gift shop with like weird toys and kids' costumes and a crop top that's kind of cute and sold out really quickly. But, you know, take power into your own hands. And on that note, listen to these ads.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
We're back. Oh, I just came back because while I was leaving in rage that anybody would use my precious tax dollars to ensure that old people can get mail, I watched the Kevin Costner movie, The Postman. And I've realized that I was wrong.
Really?
Yeah, the only two things that can save us from annihilation are the U.S. Postal Service and Kevin Costner. So, I'm back on
board.
We
always knew that, though.
That was a
quick pivot.
We're
going to make Kevin Costner president, right? That's the point everybody's arguing. That's where we all are.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's weird that you're even bringing it up. But, like, it seems repetitive. It's like, yeah, we talk about it every day. We talk about it every day.
I mean,
like,
has
why,
Kevin
like,
Costner played the president? Because I think he has.
Probably. He must have. Who wouldn't?
I'd vote for him playing the president in a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I would vote for him being the president and also the vice president. And why not?
Just consolidate the job. Cut the fat.
Costner, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe like Supreme Court, too. Fuck it.
Kevin Costner is not, I don't think he's played a president. He's played a commander in the Jack Ryan series. And he endorsed Pete Buttigieg for president.
I forgot about that shit.
Oh, he did, huh? That, yeah. See, this is why the post office needs to be defunded. Because Kevin Costner endorsed Pete Buttigieg. I'm back against a turn.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it's really been a whirlwind for me. Speaking of whirlwinds, the election's coming up in November.
Yep.
And it's everyone agrees it's going to be terrible.
Yep.
And by everyone, I mean all of the people with fancy titles and fancy jobs who work at places like the Atlantic and places like the Defense Department, who are just now being like, oh my God, we could have a civil war in this country. It could happen here. They're starting to say,
these brilliant thinkers
who are on the beating pulse of America and realized as soon as the problem hit, what could happen
here.
Yeah, it could happen here in the worst year ever. So it's time to look behind the bastards. And so,
a bunch
not the
of
worst
these,
year ever.
These modern day Cassandras have formed a group called the Transition Integrity Project, which is basically, it was organized by someone named Rosa Brooks, who's a Georgetown law professor and a former Defense Department official. She's one of the people who like founded it. And they just did basically a big role-playing game with a bunch of fancy people, including David Froom, who was there and wrote an article about it for The Atlantic. And I will be quoting from it. This is the only time I'm ever going to quote from a David Froom article on this podcast and not be just insulting David Froom, because Froom was actually at this thing. But it made the news last week because it was like, you know, the gist of this, as it was reported on, was that like a bunch of Republicans and Democrats war gamed out what might happen in the 2020 election, and it's going to be bad. Like, we're not going to know what happens on election night, and almost all of the outcomes are terrible in some way. The only one that has a reasonable chance of not being terrible out the gate is like a massive and overwhelming Joe Biden victory. Right, like if that happens, most people agree, okay, Trump will probably like more or less let things happen the way they're supposed to. But anything less than an overwhelming Biden victory is going to be some sort of fucking nightmare. And there's a decent chance that Joe Biden overwhelming victory would be a nightmare too. But anyway, that was the story as it came out. And if you actually like read into any of these articles, there's a reason I keep referencing my podcast, It Could Happen Here, because they're all talking about the stuff that we talked about in It Could Happen Here. I do want to note one thing for people like Cody, who are the same kind of nerd I am. This was a D10-based role-playing system that they used.
Oh, legit? Like they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like...
No, they used a bunch of D. It was all D10. Yeah. Yeah, no, but they did, like, to randomize the results of certain actions that different groups would take. And they had, like, basically, like, you had people who had like done jobs in the real world, kind of gaming out that same job being done by someone else in this situation. So you had, for example, they brought in like media TV anchors and stuff or whatever, like media personalities to act as the media and like respond the way they think the media would.
Right.
Yeah.
Done jobs and dragons. Right.
So yeah, exactly. God damn it. That is pretty good. So Rosa Brooks, who is, again, one of the people who organized this group in the first place, kind of summarized the results of this game by saying, all of our scenarios ended in both street-level violence and political impasse.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The law is essentially, it's almost helpless against a president who's willing to ignore it. So that's good.
Sounds awesome.
So that's a recipe for It Could Happen hearing.
Thank God I now have my body weight in gas mask filters, which is a normal thing for a person to have next to his pile of ammo that weighs as much as a small car. Things are good in America today.
agree. Hard agree.
Ooh. Thank you. So, yeah, it's not... not great. Niles Gilman, who's a historian who leads research at a think tank called the Berggruen Institute, which I'm sure is a shitty think tank because they all are.
Because it's a think tank.
Because it's a think tank. But he was one of the organizers of the exercise, and he stated he doesn't have to win the election. He just has to create a plausible narrative that he didn't lose, which is, I think,
which is very true, wild.
And relatively obvious. Yeah, it is. But it's like that's all you have to argue is you have to like make it be if it's a question. Like, okay, so one of the most basic rules of productive argument is that the burden of proof is on the person trying to claim that something is occurring, not like, right? And that's the opposite of how things work in politics. Yep. Because
especially
one of the points
now.
They make, yeah, exactly, is that like Joe Biden, essentially Trump has the ability to try to force Joe Biden to prove that the election was legitimate.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's not going to be great. But yeah.
I think that makes it sound like we're doomed.
You know, we're not doomed, but the thing that will undoom us looks a lot like, I don't know, what's happening in Belarus right now, where tens of thousands of people are throwing like Molotov cocktails by the thousand at security. Anyway, I'm just going to read a quote from a Boston Globe write-up of this thing, and it's talking about one of the founders of this thing. Brooks got the seed of the idea for the Transition Integrity Project after a dinner where a federal judge and a corporate lawyer each told her they were convinced the military or the Secret Service would have to escort Trump out of office if he lost the election and would not concede. Brooks wasn't so sure. She and Gilman decided to turn the Washington parlor game into an actual exercise. So that's interesting to me. Number one, that like the class of people who are involved in a project like this are so separated from reality that normally anything they do is an exercise in pure fantasy. And the fact that one of these people in this conversation that she's talking about, like this judge and this lawyer are both, I think, kind of yielding to fantasy that like the thing that you would expect to happen based on the letter of the law will happen because that's the thing that matters anymore. But there were enough people within this kind of completely detached political class who were like, no, actually, he might just take power, that they actually took it seriously and like did a thing about it. And I think that's, you could see, it might be a good sign that like things have gotten bad enough that some members of our famously disconnected political class are actually not wrong about the things that they're saying for the first time in any of our lifetimes. I find it unsettling. I find it deeply unsettling.
Part of what my initial reaction to hearing you just talking about this is like, yeah, you know, that's good. People acknowledging stuff. If people had covered this differently, if people had talked about this differently years ago, maybe the situation would be different. I don't know.
Yeah, we can't think about the past.
No? Okay.
Nope, that's my motto.
You've always said that. You hate it's
the past.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Never talked about history on a podcast. Yep.
Never. I would never do that. So, yeah, it's not super optimistic. And they have a whole report that we'll have a link to that you can like read if you want. Yeah, there's a couple of bits I want to go into. One of them, and this is again from the Boston Globe article, quote, both sides turned out massive street protests that Trump sought to control. In one scenario, he invoked the Insurrection Act, which allows the president to use military forces to quell unrest. The scenario that began with a narrow Biden win ended with Trump refusing to leave the White House, burning government documents, and having to be escorted out by the Secret Service. The team playing Biden in that scenario, meanwhile, sought to patch things up with Republicans by appointing moderate Republic governors, including Charlie Baker of Massachusetts, to cabinet positions, which I think is actually shows a real understanding of the Democratic Party that, like, while the president is being forcibly escorted out of the White House by the Secret Service for burning documents,
Biden is putting
Republicans in his cabinet. It's that is what would happen. Yes.
Just like calling Paul Ryan and be like, hey, do you want to, like, you busy? Yeah.
God. I'm making, I forgot the fucking Alaska lady who was almost the vice
Sarah
president.
Palin?
Jesus, I forgot her name. I was going to make a joke about him making her his vice president.
Fine.
I don't know.
Oof.
Nobody even, like,
that'd
she's
be,
not.
That would be tasty.
She's like a moderate Republican now.
She is something else.
I forgot she existed.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
I'd be surprised
so
if she wasn't like
that's a good sign.
Dipping a little bit into QAnon stuff these days. But
yeah, I mean, she probably now supports death camps. Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Broadly speaking. So, quote, the scenario that produced the most contentious dynamics, however, was one in which Trump won the Electoral College and thus the election, but Biden won the popular vote by 5 percentage points. Biden's team retracted his election night concession, fueled by Democrats angry at losing yet another election despite capturing the popular vote, as happened in 2000 and 2016. In the mock election, Trump sought to divide Democrats, at one point giving an interview to The Intercept, a left-leaning news outlet, saying Bernie Sanders would have won if Democrats had nominated him. Meanwhile, Biden's team sought to encourage large Western states to secede unless pro-democracy reforms were made. Which, number one, I can absolutely see Trump sitting down with Glenn Greenwald, and Greenwald giving him a broadly positive write-up during a time like that. It could happen.
Could happen. He already does that stuff though. And like Trump already talks about how Bernie would have won, right? Like,
yeah.
That's not
what I can't imagine. And I'm an imaginer is Joe Biden encouraging the West Coast to secede.
I have no idea where they got that scenario.
I will firmly admit that is something I am predicting will not happen.
Also,
so
if the
it
West
does,
Coast,
you can talk shit about my
if the West Coast secedes, we are not getting Biden as president, you know?
No, but Joe Biden, I think we would make the president of the Oregon Republic. He would be our leader as we hid in the mountains and shot at Californians trying to flee once the water runs out. Sorry, guys.
I mean, we've got all this.
You
got to
do what you
got
to do.
Drink.
You know.
You know, if you make it to the right checkpoint, anyway. So, yeah. Jesus Christ, it's not. It's not a great document to read. And it like the most frustrating piece of media on this is David Froom's column for The Atlantic. Because, again, number one, since Froom was there, if you want an idea of what it was like to be a part of this thing, you do kind of have to read it, even though David Froom is history's greatest monster. But also, I'll just start reading from it. Quote, the good news is that Trump cannot postpone the election or the next presidential inauguration. He has no means to do either of those things. The dates are set by law or in the text of the Constitution. Nor can Trump somehow cling to power after Inauguration Day once the electoral vote is certified against him. If the Electoral College certifies Joe Biden the winner when its votes are counted in D.C. on January 6th, then at noon on January 20th, Donald Trump ceases to be president. His signature loses all legal effect. The officer carrying the nuclear football walks away. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff does not take his call. The bottom line, there do exist outer legal boundaries to the mischief that can be done by even the most corrupt president.
That is, if people honor those boundaries.
What world does David Froom live in? I see this every like month when Trump says something wild. Everyone's like, he can't do that. It's against the law.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
He has been breaking the law every day for years.
That's not an argument against a president
doing something, and it's not an argument against Donald Trump doing something.
It's foolish.
He breaks the law in so often and so flagrantly makes me angry, and I love breaking the law. I'm a huge breaking the law.
You mentioned this earlier in his executive order stuff. Will you get sued? Yeah, you get sued for everything. He breaks the law.
Yeah, he gets sued because he's a crime guy. He's the crime guy president, and it's like so weird. Like they barely impeached him.
Yeah.
For like one of the things he's done. And David Froom's like, actually, the institutions will say, like, what? Get out of here.
You remember how we were like, oh, all this impeachment stuff is, you know, taking over the election conversation. And oh, no, we're distracting from the election because of impeachment. And now we barely even remember that he was impaged. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when David Froom worked for a war criminal who's like, publishing a book about his paintings of immigrants now instead of being in prison? Like, what are you talking about, David? What world
do you have more for us, Robert?
Back to Froom's column. So Froom goes on to like note that kind of some of the different things that he witnessed in the different games that like this group played out. The courts offered only slow, weak, and unreliable remedies. Street protests were difficult to mobilize and often proved counterproductive. Republican elected officials cowered even in the face of the most outrageous Trump acts. Democratic elected officials lacked the tools and clout to make much difference. Many of the games turned on who made the first bold move. Time after time, that first mover was Trump. Mm. And it goes on to talk about, like, in the scenarios in which Biden's team eventually won, Team Trump still managed to, like, in his words, poison the political system. And he goes on to list some of the things that were done in the game that poison the political system. And as I read this, I want you to think about how many of these things have already been done. Quote, it diverted public resources to Trump personally. It preemptively pardoned Trump associates and family members and tried to pardon Trump himself from criminal charges, including money laundering and tax evasion. It tried to boost long-term economic damage so as to prevent early economic recovery and boost Republican chances in the 2022 elections. It destroyed, hid, or privatized public records. It tried to sabotage the census to favor Republican redistricting after 2020. It refused to cooperate with the incoming administration during the transition period in ways that aggravated both pandemic response and economic recovery. It sowed pervasive mistrust in the integrity of U.S. elections in ways that would polarize and embitter U.S. politics long after 2020.
Almost all of that, right?
4 years ago?
Like, we're already there. Yeah, with almost, I guess, like, he hasn't poisoned the transitions team of the next president yet. That has not happened yet. Yeah,
because, like, the literal event that it's referring to hasn't happened yet. So
yes.
It's literally impossible to do that.
Yeah, it's... My favorite of the different possibilities they saw was the Trump, like, losing the election and not, failing to sort of contest it and moving permanently to Mar-a-Lago the day after the election and refusing to return to the White House or do any work during the lame duck period, which would be funny. Like, that would legitimately be pretty funny. And also, I could totally see happening. Like, him just trolling people for his last time in president and fucking around. Not impossible.
He's lazy and an asshole. Like, that's...
Yeah, he is lazy and an asshole, Cody.
Sounds exactly right.
Yeah.
And doing something like that, some trolling thing, will just play to his base, and whatever thing that he does next, starting a media empire, I don't know. That's Dear what he God. Wanted all along.
You know,
just play into his hand for that.
One of the things that I found kind of personally unsettling about this whole thing was, so there's, they kind of note that, like, in a lot of the scenarios when people would war game out, like Trump trying to use the military to hold on to power, the assumption was that it would not work. But they make sort of a note that is really unsettling in their write-up of this. And this is the actual Transition Accountability Project write-up, which is that basically... It's very possible that people's expectations of how the military would, the kind of positive expectations that the military would stand up for our democracy, are more or less entirely based on the fact that very recently the military had kind of stood up to Trump during a protest, mm-hmm. and that isn't necessarily the most realistic thing to base your expectations on, because the fact mm-hmm. that they kind of stood against him during a very different sort of situation that happened earlier doesn't mean they wouldn't back him to the hilt if something like this happened.
Right.
And we shouldn't make that assumption that the military, that we can rely on the military to stand up for democracy in a situation like this.
What a sentence.
It's a toss-up with that. I think that, you know, it also depends on who in the military you're talking about, too.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yes. I should ask the Navy SEAL who threw bombs at a bunch of my friends the other night if he would stand for President Trump in the...
That's
a thing that happened in Portland recently.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Sounds like fake news, Robert.
Yeah. It does. I actually was worried it might be, but then a thoroughly reported... report came out in the Oregon Public Broadcasting. Anyway, it's a bummer. He hasn't been arrested yet. Still out there. Heavily armed Navy That's SEAL cool. with a history of domestic violence who threw
Very
bombs
cool.
at a group. Anyway, fun stuff.
That all adds up. Excellent.
So the point of all this is that November is going to be the best month ever.
Oh yeah, I think that well, that's the thing. Like, it's the worst year ever. But like, we get a little treat in November of utter chaos and
Just to break up the chaos a bit, we'll get some utter chaos.
Exactly.
I think it's.
But you know who's
going
to bring
good.
Order to the chaos?
Us.
Jordan Balthazar Peterson.
Oh God!
Thank God that he has survived both his bout of poisoning himself with an all-meat diet and his bout of going to a dangerously unregulated Russian clinic and his bout of catching COVID-19 in Serbia, and will be at 100% when democracy really needs him this November.
Exactly.
The man is a machine.
He's going to save us all. It's his moment.
It's his moment. I love you, Jordan Balthazar Peterson.
Stop it.
What?
It's the worst year ever. We'll get through it together. Or not.
Oh, you're making him sound like a Muppet. You're
normalizing. I'm making him sound like that.
Jim Henson faked his death and became Jordan Peterson.
That is true.
Yeah. God, you guys are giving me a headache.
Yep.
I know.
Sorry.
Yep. I have a horrible headache.
Horrible headache. I think that's just called the 2020. It's just a horrible.
The 2020?
Yeah.
I think it's called covering protests every single night for months and months.
Do you have more, Robert?
No, I don't. I mean,
thank God, but also,
broadly, there's always more to say.
Well, I think we've said it all for today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Despite all of this, I've had fun seeing you guys today.
Yeah.
Always a joy.
Yeah. And if you want to see more of us, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Worst Year Pod. And you can follow Cody at Dr. Mr. Cody and Katie at Katie Stoll and Robert at I Write OK.
Well done, Sophie.
And if you want to prepare for November, there's a variety of useful skills you could invest in. Learning
stamps.
How to make shields, learning how to wield a sling. Volunteering for vote counting, maybe, but probably not. But
I actually, a non-joke, garden. I mentioned this on Even More News. There is a real lack of poll workers, a severe lack of poll workers being able to step up because most poll workers are over the age of 60. So if you are healthy and feel reasonable risking it, that might be something that we can do to step up during this time. I'm not telling you what to do. I don't know my own comfort level, but it is definitely a need, and someone's got to do it.
Yep.
And that seems like a great place to end the show. Bye.
It is a great place to end the show. Bye.
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 I tried. Yes. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.